and welcome to this bonus CD where we have an incredible guest to speak with here on the phone today. Real quickly, this coach is one of the most generous people I've ever spoken to in the college strength and conditioning field. Not only is his professional career a shining example of upright character and commitment, but his this gentleman's life outside of the weight room is truly that of a valuable contributor to humankind. From personal experience, I can tell you that this coach will really take his time to support young athletes or anyone looking to learn more about the advancements in sports, business, or life. And I'm really excited to introduce the University of South Florida's strength and conditioning coach, Ron McKeefrey. Coach McKeefrey, real quick, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, sure, Elliot. You know, one, I want to thank you for allowing me to be a part of this. Obviously, I get the opportunity to work with a lot of young men, young ladies that are able to come to our program. And a lot of times they're either they've gone through, bad experiences with strength and conditioning or they're just looking to advance. They're eager for learning. And so I'm excited about what you got going on, the programs that you have in place to help
Thanks.
Young athletes reach their goals, and then obviously I'm one of the coaches that is able to benefit from that when they come in and they have been trained. It allows us to not have to waste a lot of time on teaching techniques if they've come in and they have proper technique already.
Absolutely.
To right away work on performance. But my experience is, I've been here for the last 8 seasons, last 7 years at the University of South Florida. I've been head strength coach here. Prior to that, I was the head strength coach with the Berlin Thunder in NFL Europe, and then I held some positions with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Royals. Played college ball at a school called Ottawa University, and had some football coaching experience there as well. And that's all been able to, all those experiences have contributed to our program now.
Coach, that's incredible. And yeah, last week I had the fortunate experience to be able to go into the weight room and check out your program a little bit. And I can say that Coach McKeefrey really runs a tight ship over there and offers an incredible service to athletes coming into the program. Now, Coach, really quickly, again, a lot of the athletes that are listening to this program and parents that are listening to this program want to prepare their high school athlete for a strength and conditioning program at the next level, which for them would be college, a program that you're involved with. So what do you feel are the 3 most important factors for a high school athlete preparing for a college strength and conditioning program to consider?
Well, obviously, I think for high school athletes in general, I think it's important for them to realize that your body's still changing. It's hard to just specialize in a specific sport, a specific position, just simply because, you're 5'11 as a junior in high school, and then you turn around and you spurt up to 6'4 and gain 40 pounds. Well, you're probably not going to be that running back anymore. You're probably not going to be that quarterback per se. And so, from a position standpoint, I see a lot of high school kids specializing in a specific sport or a specific position, and when you do that, you limit yourself as to what your possibilities are going on. So, I encourage high school athletes as much as possible to play as many different sports as possible, and that all contributes to athleticism.
Sure.
Skills that you learn in other sports such as basketball and soccer and wrestling and things along those lines will help you as a football player or as a baseball player.
Absolutely.
And so, by developing overall athleticism, that contributes later on down the road when you do have the ability to specialize and you have been able to pinpoint that area that you're going to do well in. Second thing is training the whole body. A lot of times high school athletes, they'll train only simply what they see in the mirror because that's what they see, that's what other people see. And so a lot of areas get neglected, such as the quads, the back. These lead to a lot of injuries, and not only injuries, but from a performance standpoint as well. you know, as we talked the other day and about bench press max, you know.
Right.
You know, your bench press max is, you know, usually you have a sticking point about an inch off the chest, and all of a sudden you thicken your back up because you start training the back in college, and that's why a lot of college kids come home and, you know, they're able to, you know, they're that much bigger, and they're up, you know, their bench press max up 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds sometimes, because all of a sudden they've trained the whole body and they've gotten a little bit thicker, and so that sticking point went away.
Right. And, it's, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking of something as you're speaking. You know, a lot of kids, like you said earlier, are the parents are having them specialize at really young ages. It's funny sometimes. I get kids in that are 10, 12 years old, and they've been specializing in a particular sport and a particular position as well. And then the muscle imbalances that creates, really what you're saying about training the whole body will contribute to balancing out a lot of those imbalances from continually throwing with one arm or kicking with one leg, because you're only playing one sport for year after year. So that what you just described is absolutely key from the beginning.
Right. And the other thing too to keep in mind is that, you know, injuries are part of the game, you know. So all of a sudden you specialize your whole life as a pitcher. You played baseball your whole life, but only simply as a pitcher, and then you get hurt. You know, well then, if you've never had any kind of reps at shortstop or at first base or center field or whatever, all of a sudden now your career is over.
Yeah.
As opposed to where if you had some, you know, if you don't develop that athleticism and you develop those other ball skills and those other sports skills, you're able to continue your playing career, because ultimately you play it because you love the game, not because you love the position.
Right.
The last thing, you know, I see with high school kids, and something that, you know, really needs to be stressed more, is obviously nutrition.
Mm.
You know, so many kids are not eating correctly, and that simply, you know, we see the extremes. We see that, you know, a lot of times their metabolism is that of a jackrabbit when you're in high school, but you're not forming good habits. And one of the things that we preach to our kids here is that, you know, we're trying to teach you life skills, life habits, you know, stuff that's going to keep you and prevent you from becoming obese or becoming overweight and leading, you know, to possible diseases such as heart diseases and things along those lines later down the road. So forming those good habits now, you know, will translate on into, you know, your life. But you know, from a performance standpoint, again, I mean, you go out there and you've had a Coke that day and a Snickers bar and a turkey sandwich and maybe a bagel on your way to school. You know, you're not going to have the same performance as if you ate two or three meals by that time.
Right.
At practice, you know, and every kid, you know, I've come across, not every kid, but most kids, you know, they're looking for the magic pills. You know, they're looking for all the supplements, and they're looking for all the, you know, the magic things that this is what they can eat, and that, you know, that covers everything. And there's no such thing.
Absolutely.
Know? In 1994, the Dietary Supplement Act came out through Congress, and basically took supplements out of the drug category, which is a very regulated business, and put it into the food category. Well, you know, as Americans, we're much more concerned with our meat and our milk and our cheese and our, you know, different things on those lines, the way that's taken care of, that's much more of a, you know, more money that goes into that than supplements. And supplements are a business where there's, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry where, you know, there's a lot of money going into politicians' hands to get it the other way. You know, so, I mean, it's a $500 fine for a supplement company to not put what they say they put in the jar.
Yeah.
You know, so for a company that's making, you know, $25 million a year, $500 doesn't seem like that, you know, isn't going to phase them one bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, so these, from a nutritional standpoint, just eating a balanced program, you know, having a balanced meal plan, learning how to really truly eat that way, you know, because unless you have a professional to assist you, you know, with ideas and creative ways to do it,
right?
You're often left up to your own demise, and so it's, you know, it ends up being not so much not wanting to eat correctly, it's just not knowing how to eat correctly.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that you mentioned with regard to all the advertisement and marketing that supplement companies have to do. One of the things that I teach my athletes is if you've seen a commercial for it or an ad for it, chances are it's not the best thing for you. You never see a commercial for grass-fed steak, you know. You never see commercials for broccoli on TV, but
sure. You're
definitely going to see tons of commercials for all types of sports supplements, and that's the money that they're using to basically convince you against your innate instinct to eat something that is really just not food.
Right. Well, the other thing, just one more tidbit on supplements. You know, all that stuff goes in as a powder. It may be in a liquid format, to ingest, but it becomes a powder in the stomach.
Right.
And what happens is your body has to dilute that to process it. And so your body's made up, of 90% water, but intramuscularly, your muscles are made up of 90% water as well. So what happens is instead of using the fluid that you're putting in your system, which is, helping out with this regulatory processes, what happens is the body pulls water out of the muscle cell to dilute that powder. And by doing that, that's all of a sudden now you're pulling that muscle out, and you're predisposing that muscle to cramping and pulls and strains and things on those lines. So living down in the state of Florida, with the heat the way it is,
yep.
you don't want to have that muscle be dehydrated at all.
That's interesting. Wow, I've never thought of that. Yeah, you're still on point with that. Coach, another question, another thing that, I consider important, and I'm sure a lot of parents are thinking about as well, are the physical weaknesses that are coming in that you've noticed with the incoming freshmen. Like you said earlier, most part, high school athletes are going to Gold's Gym and doing bench press or whatever they see in Flex Magazine to a repetitive degree, and that imbalance will ultimately produce a lack of performance as well as injury susceptibility. What do you feel are, you mentioned the quads earlier in the back, what do you feel are the biggest weaknesses, the most common across the board from incoming freshmen, and what do you think they should do to improve that?
Well, I would say that, every athlete's different, and again, some of the things that we've talked about in this conversation even so far is by the sport that you play or by the position you play, you're going to create muscular imbalances just in general that are different. A pitcher's imbalances are going to be different than a shortstop sometimes. Plus you add in, injuries that occur, and compensation patterns because of that. Again, it becomes, like I said, every athlete is different. Neglected areas in general, I'd rather speak to just neglected areas in general, are, like I said, the quads. I mean, any kind of deceleration. All the MCL and ACL injuries are brought about because the athlete typically doesn't know how to decelerate the body. And because of that, then you put yourself in a bad position, and it takes just a little shot from somebody or a little twist from somebody, and then you tear a ligament.
Yep.
The other things are all the things posterior. If those are untrained, and again, the minute that you have to go and use that muscle in a full range.
Anything in the back, you're saying?
Yeah, anything in the back of the body.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime, because those are all your propulsion muscles. Those are all, and again, those are deceleration muscles as well a lot of times. But you're always going to push-pull. You're going to do something on the field or, where you're doing a push-pull action. And the minute you go to use those, if they're not used and they're not trained, then that leads to injury. But, some other areas that are often neglected, the neck in contact sports. So if you're playing lacrosse or, basketball or football or hockey or something along those lines, wrestling, if you're not training that neck, and that's the most catastrophic injury there is.
Yeah.
It could lead to, quadriplegic, paraplegic. So if you're not training that, you're really doing an injustice to the athlete. There are some other things that we train in here, are the grip. How many times have you seen a game-saving tackle with one hand?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, so things that often go missed in training programs, and other examples, we train, the anterior tibialis, which is the muscle that's right on the on top of your shin.
Interesting.
And by doing that, we help prepare the athlete against ankle sprains, which are very common in all sports, but it'll keep you on the sideline just as easily as any torn muscle. So, you know, we try to train areas of the body. We're trying to train the total body, so it prepares the athlete for the rigors of competition.
Right.
Because in competition, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You can see pictures from any sporting event, and you're going to see the body being contorted in different directions. So by preparing the total body, you're protecting that athlete.
Absolutely. You're mentioning the muscles in the back of the body, and yeah, I was fortunate enough just to, my uncle taught me how to weight train when I was in high school, but a lot of the kids that I see coming in right now, some of the very first exercises that we have to throw into their program to get the back of the body up to par are bent over rows. We like to do a lot of those, definitely deadlift variations and glute ham bench, any type of hip extension exercises, the glutes, the butt and the hamstrings, mid lower back. I'm also discovering that with the younger athletes, they're just because they're sitting all day, so they grow very weak.
Well, that's a video game generation as well. I mean, it's not anymore you're going out and climbing trees and riding your bike all day and things along those lines. You're sitting in front of a computer or a TV,
mm-hmm.
Playing video games a lot of times.
Coach, there's a lot of myths. I discovered a lot of them when I was younger. I still see them out there today. Kids come in and tell them to me, and I almost laugh. But there are a lot of myths about strength and conditioning, things that just simply aren't true, that a lot of young athletes and parents and even some high school coaches are not aware of. Could you give us one or two that you think most people would benefit from knowing?
One, I think, it's a common one by anybody that was an athlete back in the, 50s, 60s, and early 70s. You were taught that, getting bulky is going to make you slower, or you're not going to be able to go, or be able to go through the full range of motion on things such as maybe a pitcher or a batter or something along those lines where you need to have quite a bit of flexibility in that movement, so... That's a common one I often get, but again, that's been proven over and over again that that's not the case.
Yeah.
With your business specifically would be, training the younger athletes. There's quite a few myths as to resistance training and just overall strength and conditioning for, say an athlete that's, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah. Interesting. I send out a newsletter, and recently I sent out something with regard to that, and I just took the reader back to the 1800s when the United States was an agrarian culture, and 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds were baling hay.
Sure.
They were baling hay, they were digging ditches, they were pulling horses or cows, and climbing up and down ladders. I mean, they were really weight training. They were tough kids back then that were required to do basically weight training and strength and conditioning as a part of their daily life just to put food on the table. And they contributed greatly to their homes as well as to the economic development of the United States. But in comparison, I get a lot of parents that are worried about their 9, 10, 11-year-old doing some weight training exercise, and I have to remind them that, hey, through the history of mankind, what's gotten us here is the fact that that even young people can work.
Right. Well, the other thing to consider, one is not all strength and conditioning is just simply resistance training where you're loading the spine or anything along those lines. I mean, obviously, any professional is not going to load an 8-year-old up with a squat bar, there's other ways of teaching the body to go through, just proper joint mechanics, proper balance and coordination and things like that. That we got to remember now that physical education isn't what it was.
Right.
Our kids aren't getting taught in school the same way. Not to discredit what's being taught as physical education, but there's an overall lack of resources allocated to physical education teachers now, or time, and because of that, it becomes just roll the ball out and go play, as opposed to teaching, jump rope and bounding and things along those lines, or teaching the proper stretching mechanics, things like that, because it's not interesting. And because it's not interesting to the kids, it becomes a complaint. And because it becomes a complaint, parents don't want to send their kid to physical education.
Yeah.
You know, they'd rather have their kid go, you know, the kid comes home, he said he played basketball all day long, then he's happy. You know?
Right.
And so a lot of just simple joint mechanics and range of motion type drills and locomotion drills are getting missed in our educational system now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I just remember when we were younger that even the physical education program was much more comprehensive. And we enjoyed doing it. I don't know. I'm pretty blunt for the most part when I speak with parents. And for the most part, the kids are lazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're just plain old lazy. There's no question about it. They're plain old lazy and weak. And I get kind of worked up about it sometimes because it's an issue that has to be dealt with if people are going to or have their children fulfill the aspirations that they have for them. You know, oftentimes I get kids that come in that are 16, 17 years old and still can't do a simple body weight squat or a lunge without twisting and falling all over themselves. So, I mean, you're doing yourself in our nation, you're doing everybody a favor by getting your kids off the couch. And like
right.
you said, going ahead and not being afraid to let them get out and do things. I've got a three-year-old daughter, and recently I sent out a YouTube video of her climbing up on the couch and jumping off. Basically, she was doing deceleration jumps off the couch. I think most parents want to stop their kids when they go ahead and experiment with their bodies at a very young age. And we encourage you, or even at 4 years old, to climb stuff, get up there. You know, you may fall down, you may scrape something, but even that builds character, and I think that goes a long way with regard to athletics.
Right, right.
Now, I know we spoke a little bit about supplements, your opinion I am totally on par with. For a very long time there, I didn't recommend any supplements to anyone. And we work very exclusively on getting the diet right, which is the foundation. I mean, people just don't eat food anymore, as strange as that may sound. I saw a book in the Barnes & Nobles the other day, and on the title of it, the subtitle was something to the effect that Americans are no longer interested in food, we're interested in nutrients. We're more interested in the names of the vitamins and the minerals and the macronutrients than actual foods themselves, potatoes, rice, and chicken, and fish. Well, I do now recommend a few supplements to the kids because they're just not eating. But I'm wondering, you know, if there are any that you recommend to any of the athletes that you're training now, or if the kids were going to use anything, is there anything that you think would be appropriate?
Well, you know, what we recommend here, you know, obviously with NCAA, we have certain restrictions and guidelines that we have to follow. And I think they're safe guidelines. I think I'd recommend it to pretty much anybody. But, you know, what we try to do is try to give them food.
Right.
You know, and, you know, supplements that we take, we take the collegiate muscle milk is the only actual supplement that we give.
Mm-hmm.
We give the Gatorade nutrition shakes, and we give the Champion snack bars. And the Champion snack bars and the Gatorade nutrition shakes have food have a food label. The muscle milk has a supplement label. So if you go to a supplement store and you pull something out and it gives you supplement, table contents or supplement ingredients list,
right.
Then then something's been added to it. If it has food fact, nutrition facts, then it is classified a food by everybody, by the Food and Drug Administration. So, because it's a food, that means that any of the, you know, you can buy it at Walmart or Target or something, you know, or a grocery store.
Okay.
If they decided to sell it, you know, now they don't typically sell it because that's not the business that they're in. You know, they're in the food business, you know, but, you know, so I would, you know, well, the big thing for, you know, is it's intended to be a supplement to the diet. So
right.
if you're getting neglected somewhere, if you're not getting enough protein, then have some protein.
Right.
If you're not getting enough carbohydrates, then have some sort of carbohydrate, you know, shake or something along those lines. But it's intended to be a supplement, meaning that you can't get it in. You physically can't get it in. And so with athletes, what happens is, you know, because you've built so much muscle mass, things on those lines, it becomes impossible with the schedule.
Right.
to get that many calories in.
Right.
You know, that you need to maintain that. And it's healthy to maintain it, because if you're not, then it becomes the atrophy, and it becomes, you know, then you have some, you'll have some deficiencies and potential injury areas.
So what it sounds like you're saying is, you know, you're basically just adding a few extra calories with food-type supplements, as opposed to using all the fancy stuff with the shiny labels that you see at Vitamin Shoppe.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's basically what we're doing here as well, you know, because it is tough for the kids to get the calories in. There are some high-calorie sort of snack foods like peanut butter and jelly and things like that that I often recommend because of lack of time. But just like yourself, I recommend, I'm not familiar with the Gatorade one, but Muscle Milk, which now I've discovered through you, is actually more of a supplement than a food like the Gatorade. And what was the other?
Champion Snack Bars.
Champion Snack. Okay, cool. Well, Coach, you know, many parents of high school athletes are becoming savvy to the idea of getting their athletes to their young men and women to weight train and do speed drills. You know, a lot of parents are preparing these, you know, in their basement. They're doing them in their driveway. Often I speak to parents who have pieced together programs that they've gotten all over the place for their kids with great, you know, great intentions. Could you just give us a rough layout? I know it's difficult to do this if you haven't assessed the athlete, you don't know their position, you don't know much about them, but something that's, you know, safe and effective that perhaps a parent could use as a framework for designing a strength and conditioning program for a high school athlete.
Well, I mean, you have five major areas in the body. You have your lower body, you have your upper torso, you have your torso, your core, you have your arms, and you have your neck and your traps. So basically, you want to provide exercises for each of those areas, you know. And again, without, you know, it's very difficult as a parent if you don't have a solid background. Just because you know, the next thing I would tell you to do is to make sure you train all those muscle groups in the different planes of movement. You know, so, you know, if the muscle goes front, back, side, side, and rotates, well, then you need to provide exercises for all those areas. You know, so, you know, that's why, again, you know, with what Elliot does and what you know, I do and other strength and conditioning professionals, it's important that you have some sort of structure at least provided and developed, so that something doesn't get missed, because that one thing that does get missed, maybe the injury that keeps them off the field for that year, and or her off the field for that year, and if it's a junior, senior, you know, that may be the difference in a college scholarship, or, you know, for some of these athletes, might be a professional.
Right.
So, you know, from a program design standpoint, I mean, you basically want to, you know, you want to provide exercises for all those areas. And the other thing I would tell you is that you need to do it in both a multiple joint and a single joint fashion. So, without getting too much into the science of it, that's what I would provide.
Okay, just making sure that the program is well-rounded.
Right.
In other words, you're doing a push, you're doing a pull, you're using the legs, core, things of that nature. If you can give us, like, you know, the top three exercises that you think should definitely be included, what do you think they would be?
Well, I mean, depends on the sport again. You know,
right.
If it's a contact sport, my number one exercise is the neck. Mm. You know, if it's you know, or whatever the most common injury-prone area for that sport is. To be honest with you, you know, we try not to say that any one exercise is any more important than another, just simply because, you know, again, if you have a strained calf or a pulled calf, you're going to be on the sideline just as easily as if you have a pulled hamstring.
Absolutely, yep.
So, I mean, but, you know, I mean, obviously, the multiple joint movements of, you know, squat, you know, deadlift, you know, bench press, things along those lines, those are multiple joint movements that recruit a lot of muscles at once. So, you know, from a time and efficiency standpoint, that's good. But like I said, I mean, if you're only doing that, you're missing.
Right.
You're missing out on still a lot of important areas of the body. And so, again, I mean, I think that's why it's important that to, you know, if anything, get a program that's designed a total body program that's designed and it meets strength and conditioning principles over the course of the week.
Okay. Thanks, Coach. Coach, we really appreciate your time. I want to thank you again. You're truly a great example for us all. I'm wondering if anybody ever wanted to perhaps email you, get in touch with you, just to shoot you a question. Would you be all right with that?
Yeah, that's no problem.
Cool, because a lot of people are listening to this and they may have some questions. Could I give out your email address, or
sure.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what email address would be great for people to get in touch with you at?
It's RMCKEE. F is in Frank, E, at admin.usf.edu.
Great, and you guys are doing an incredible job over there at USF. Great season. I've only been here in Florida, in South Florida, for a couple years, but I've watched this program really emerge, and I want to congratulate you because I'm sure you've got a big hand in what's going on over there, especially with the football program.
Appreciate that.
You got it, Coach. Well, Coach, thanks again, and we appreciate your time.
No problem.
Have a good one.
Take care.